Today's lesson is titled, I titled earlier, Righteous Lot, a Warning to All Humans. We're going to be reading from Genesis. We're going through the Genesis basically through with the lenses of Abraham and his faith and how it can encourage us and the people that are in his peripherals or his children or descendants. And we came to chapter 18 and 19 today. And sometimes I do skip certain passages or certain chapters, but today I felt like this is good. I don't know if anybody had a chance to read ahead. Let's just set the scene. This is chapter 18, verse 1. It says, "And the Lord appeared to him, Abraham, by the oaks of Mamre, as he sat at the door of his tent in the heat of the day. He lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, three men stood in front of him. Then he saw them. He ran from the tent door to meet them and bowed himself to the earth and said, 'My Lord, if I have found favor in your sight, do not pass by your servant. Let a little water be brought and wash your feet and rest yourself under the tree while I fetch a morsel of bread that you may refresh yourself and after you may pass on, since you have come to your servants.' So they said, 'Do as you have said.' And Abraham hastened into the tent to Sarah and said, 'Make ready quickly three measures of fine meal, knead it, and make cakes.' And Abraham ran to the herd and took a calf, tender and good, gave it to the servant who hastened to prepare it. Then he took curds and milk and the calf which he had prepared and set it before them, and he stood by them under the tree while they ate." So before we can get to Lot's story, the chapter 18 is bringing us to Abraham and these three men that are visiting. So these three men are passing. So it's gonna be a little delayed in my introduction because I need to introduce this backdrop. We're gonna talk about how Lot is righteous, why he's righteous. We're gonna talk about In a basic reading of the scripture, sometimes you start to scratch your head. And why does the Bible even call him righteous? Peter calls him righteous in 2 Peter chapter 2. But focus is going to be on Lot. But we're going to be also learning a little bit from Abraham because he's the focus of our ongoing series. So this three man approaches Abraham. Abraham sees them. He runs to them, invites them over, and he is hand and foot waiting on them. Makes you wonder why. Why does Abraham so excited to host these three people? And why is he so eager? And is this something that he was always? He entertained strangers. Did he always super hospitable? I like to say yes. Verse 9, they said to him, "Where is Sarah, your wife?" And he said, "She's in the tent." The Lord said, "I'll surely return to you in the spring, and Sarah, your wife, shall have a son." And Sarah was listening at the tent door behind him. Now Abraham and Sarah were old, advanced in age. It has ceased to be with Sarah after the manner of woman. So Sarah laughed to herself, saying, "After I've grown old and my husband is old, shall I have pleasure? The Lord said to Abraham, "Why did Sarah laugh and say, 'Shall I indeed bear a child now that I'm old? Is anything too hard for the Lord?' At the appointed time, I'll return to you in the spring, and Sarah shall have a son." But Sarah denied, saying, "I did not laugh," for she was afraid. He said, "But you did laugh." So this story is really right after God says 2 weeks ago, we had a lesson, Abraham, what was the title of the lesson? A friend of God, how God told him, walk before me and be blameless. And they got into a covenant. Abraham and his seed has gotten into a covenant with God. Abraham's supposed to walk with God, walk facing him and be righteous, blameless. And God's supposed to be giving them increases seed, that they will be numerous, and that they will inherit the land that they were land of Canaan, and that God will be their God. So they circumcised themselves to get into this covenant, every male in his household. This is exactly right after. This three men appears mysteriously, and they tell him that Sarah is going to have a son, and Sarah laughs. And when Abraham confronts his wife, she says, "I did not laugh." And he says, "Yes, you did laugh." How does Abraham know that she did laugh? Because in the previous chapter, he laughed, right? That's chapter 17, verse 17. If you read that, you would see that he laughed. That's why Isaac is called Isaac. He laughs, or that laughs. So they're all laughing to this whole thing. Even the wife and the husband is confronting him here. So these three men eat and drink. I want you to notice that he's bringing an animal. He's slaughtering it. So there's some shish kebabs or barbecue. There's bread, fine meal, knead it and make it cakes. And then he takes curds and milk. So there's like meat, bread, and drinks. And I was looking at the word curds. What are the curds?
Yogurt.
It's yogurt. It could be yogurt. It could be butter. It could be cheese. So this was pretty good for strangers to enjoy. So I have to tell you, Abraham was going out all the way quickly. The meat, the bread, the curds, the milk. It was a pretty good spread. I have to tell you, it wasn't just a light. It was just, and he does it in haste. It's like unexpected guests. They show up. Abraham pulls it together. And one of them says, "You're going to have a son next year." Verse 16, "Then the son, when the man set out from there, and they looked towards Sodom, and Abraham went with them to set them on their way." So after they eat, they're going to travel towards Sodom. Well, let me give you a little geography here so that you guys can know what's going on. So Oaks of Mamre is the same place as Hebron. Hebron is on the west side of Dead Sea. Sodom and Gomorrah is on the south side of Dead Sea. The valleys that the cities were located was in the south part of Dead Sea in Israel, if you look at the geography. Hebron is about 3,000 feet above the sea level. Sodom and Gomorrah is on a Dead Sea, where Sodom and Gomorrah was at the probably level of, is 1,400 feet below. So Hebron is in the hill. The valleys that Sodom and Gomorrah is on the bottom of the hill. So they start traveling. Then the men set out, verse 16, set off from there. They looked towards Sodom, and Abraham went with them to set them on their way. The Lord said, "Shall I hide from Abraham what I'm about to do, seeing that Abraham shall become a great and mighty nation, and all the nations of the earth shall bless themselves by him? No, for I've chosen him that he may charge his children and his household after him to keep the way of the Lord by doing righteousness and justice, so that the Lord may bring to Abraham what he has promised him." Then the Lord said, "Because the outcry against Sodom and Gomorrah is great, their sin is very grave, I will go down to see whether they have done altogether according to the outcry which has come to me. If not, I will know." So he tells him that Abraham is going to become a great nation if he teaches his children and children after him to do righteousness and justice, so that the Lord will do his part. But they're going towards Sodom and Gomorrah. And why are they going there? Verse 20. "Then the Lord said, because the outcry against Sodom and Gomorrah is great and their sin is very grave, I will go down to see whether they've done altogether according to the outcry which has come to me. And if not, I'll know." Question is, I'll ask you a question here. Obviously, you don't have to answer. It's a rhetorical. Does God have to actually send an angel to Sodom and Gomorrah to see how wicked they are? Doesn't God see everything? He doesn't have to send the angels to know how wicked they have been. God sees every wicked deed. Why do you think he sends the angels to the Sodom and Gomorrah? It's not for him to know whether what they've done is that vile. It is for us. Why is it for us? So that you can see that God doesn't do anything arbitrarily. He looks into it. He knows it. In this case, we're privy to see how he does it. But he didn't have to send the angels there to see how wicked they are. Already the outcry was against it. People were already in pain of the sins of the Sodom and Gomorrah. This is for you to see, it's for us to see how wicked these people were, so that you will know that God is a just God, that he doesn't do anything. If he's a good judge, and you cannot accuse him of being a bad judge. Verse 22. So the men turned from there and went toward Sodom, but Abraham still stood before the Lord. Then Abraham drew near and said, "Would you indeed destroy the righteous with the wicked? Suppose there are 50 righteous within the city. Will you then destroy the place and not spare it for the 50 righteous who are in it?" I want you to notice early on, there were three people eating with Abraham, but only two angels will reach Sodom and Gomorrah. The third one stays behind and is talking to Abraham. Verse 22, he calls them. The Bible says Abraham still stood before the Lord. Then Abraham drew near and said, "Would you destroy the righteous with the wicked?" You will see that the third one stays behind to talk to Abraham, and Abraham refers to him as Lord. Who is the third one? Who's talking to him that is God? Is it God really talking to him? Can you see God and live? Did anybody see God? I think the answer lies in Colossians chapter 1, verse 15, referring to Jesus. He is the image of the invisible God. He is, Jesus, is the image of the invisible God. God is invisible. So who's he talking to? Is it Jesus he's talking to? I like to believe that he's Jesus. Verse 22. So the men turned from there and went toward Sodom, but Abraham still stood before the Lord. Then Abraham drew near and said, "Will ye indeed destroy the righteous with the wicked? Suppose there are 50 righteous within the city. Would you then destroy the place and not spare it for the 50 righteous who are in it? Far it be from you to do such a thing, to slay the righteous with the wicked, so that the righteous fare as the wicked? Far be that from you. Shall not the judge of all the earth do right?" And the Lord said, "If I find at Sodom 50 righteous in the city, I'll spare the whole place for their sake." Abraham answered, "Behold, I have taken upon myself to speak to the Lord, I who am but dust and ashes. Suppose 5 of the 50 righteous are lacking, would you destroy the whole city for lack of 5? He said, "I will not destroy it if I find 45 there." Again, he spoke to him and said, "Suppose 40 are found there." He answered, "For the sake of 40, I'll not do it." Then he said, "Oh, let not the Lord be angry, and I will speak. Suppose 30 are found there." He answered, "I'll not do it if I find 30 there." He said, "Behold, there I've taken upon myself to speak to the Lord. Suppose 20 are found there." He answered, "For the sake of 20, I'll not destroy it." Then he said, "Oh, let not the Lord be angry. I will speak again. But this once, suppose 10 are found there." He answered, "For the sake of 10, I will not destroy it." And the Lord went his way. When he had finished speaking to Abraham, Abraham returned to his place. Obviously, this is a great passage. God is like, in here, since he cannot see God, I would like to think that Jesus was there talking to Abraham. They're having this conversation. Abraham is challenging Jesus, or God, the Lord. How? He says, if there are 50 people in the Sodom or Gomorrah, would you destroy it? He says, I will not surely do that, because I will spare the righteous. Then the number goes down to 45, 40, 30, 20, 10. They end at 10. I want you to, this is a side point. He says, Abraham says, "27, Abraham answered, behold, I have taken upon myself to speak to the Lord, I who am but dust and ashes." Do you guys remember a couple sessions ago about Abraham? I think it was titled Abraham, the Champion of Faith. You remember there were four kings that came from the north to fight the five kings of the south, and they were victorious. They were carrying the slaves, Sodom and Gomorrah, and all the cities that were captured and the people. You guys remember Abraham went after them with 318 men, I believe, and he was victorious. He comes back as a champion of the world, and he's standing in front of God and says, I'm nothing but dust and ashes. How could Abraham see? Why he see a dust and ashes? You guys remember, it goes back to Genesis. Ashes. God creates Adam in the garden out of the soil. He breathes into a living soul, man becomes alive. You guys remember when serpent comes to Eve? The temptation reads as such, if you eat from the tree of knowledge of knowing good and evil, you'll be like God, knowing. Could dust ever be like God, who created everything, the universe, the earth, the waters, the living things that are flying, or the cattle that is ground? Can man ever be like God? But that's the temptation. You'll be like God. See, serpent, Satan, is discontent with who he is, what has been given to him. He wants what God has. So when serpent goes to woman and tempts him, if you eat from this tree of knowledge, you will be like God, knowing good and evil. The temptation is, you will be like God. You can never be like God. You're just made out of dust and ashes. Abraham knows it. If you yourself think that you're more than dust and ashes, you're deceived. That's why Abraham can climb up in his faith journey with God, and Jesus will stand in front of him, because he's a humble man. Humility is essential. If you think you're somebody when you're dust and ashes, you're deceived. You're conceited. What do you have that you have not been given? What do you have that has not been given to you? Did you choose your parents? Did you choose your height? Did you choose your skin color? Did you choose the country you're going to be born? Did you choose whether you're going to be smart or not smart? Did you? Mm-hmm. All of it is given. So how can you boast if it's all given? Abraham is already enlightened with this. He knows that he is dust and ashes, yet he is valuable because he loves God. He has a relationship with God. God is conversating with him because he esteems him. So humility is essential. We are in chapter 19 now, verse 1. The two angels came to Sodom in the evening, and Lot was sitting in the gate of Sodom. I want you to notice that the three angels went up to Abraham early on that day when the sun was hot. They sat down, they ate and drank, they had the meat, the bread, milk, and the curds. And they left probably Abraham in the late afternoon. So it's evening now, and they reach Sodom. if you look at the distance between Hebron and Sodom, is about 25 miles. So they made the trek in several hours, basically. And they reached their city, which is Sodom and Gomorrah, is their target city. When Lot saw them, he rose to meet them and bowed himself with his face to the earth and said, "My lords, turn aside, I pray to you, to your servant's house and spend the night and wash your feet. Then you may rise up early and go on your way." They said, "No, we will spend the night in the street." But he urged them strongly. So they turned aside to him and entered his house. He made them a feast and baked unleavened bread, and they ate. Why is Lot entertaining the strangers? Who would before him, who was so eager to entertain strangers?
Abraham.
Why? And if out of the three early on, was one of them was Lord, let's call him Jesus. If he was Jesus, he's feeding Jesus. And Lot is entertaining angels. You remember Jesus says, "You saw me, I was hungry, you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, you gave me something to drink." Literally, Abraham was feeding Jesus. Hospitality is apparently super important, which is sometimes totally ignored in our society. But you see that Lot and Abraham are super hospitable. Super. They're not just giving them bread and water. They're putting a feast for their guests. And they're insisting as if it's an honor, as if they're getting some sort of a credit by doing so. They're insisting on their guests to come to their house. Verse 4, but before they lay down, the men of the city, the men of Sodom, both young and old, all the people to the last man, surrounded the house, and they called to Lot, "Where are the men who came to you tonight? Bring them out to us, that you may know them." Lot went out of the door to the men, shut the door after him, and said, "I beg you, my brothers, do not act so wickedly. Behold, I have two daughters who have now known men. Let me bring them out to you, and to do to them as you please. Only do nothing to these men, for they have come under the shelter of my roof." But they said, "Stand back." And they said, "This fellow came to sojourn, and he will play the judge. Now we will deal worse with you than with them." Then they pressed hard against the man Lot, drew near to break the door. But the men put forth their hands, brought Lot into the house to them, and shut the door. And they struck with blindness the men who were at the door of the house, both small and great, so that they wearied themselves groping for the door. So the young and old of the city comes to Lot's door and want to have sex with the angels that came down as a guest. Perhaps they don't know that they're angels, but they're coming to have sex with them, young and old. Lot says, "Don't do such a wicked thing. I have two daughters." It seems like sin is sin, but there are levels of sin. There is levels of wickedness, right? You can kill one person or you can kill five person. Is it the same if you kill one person versus five? It seemed like to Lot, whatever these men were about to do, young and old that came to his door, doing it with the men was more wicked than his daughters. It seems like. I'll leave it at that. Verse 12. Then the men said to Lot, "Have you anyone else, sons-in-law, sons, daughters, or anyone you have in the city? Bring them out out of the place, for we are about to destroy this place, because the outcry against this people has become great before the Lord, and the Lord has sent us to destroy it." So Lot went out, said to his sons-in-law, who were to marry his daughters, "Up out of this place, for the Lord is about to destroy the city." But he seemed to his sons-in-law to be joking.
Wait, his sons-in-law thought he was joking?
Yes. So the angel says, you're going to leave the city. We're going to destroy the city. Do you have any relatives, anybody that belongs to you? Tell them to get out of this place. First question is, does Lot believe the angels?
I mean, I think so, if he's telling everybody.
Yeah, he has faith. And not only he has faith, he's acting upon his faith. Does the sons of law have faith?
No.
They don't. They don't.
Oh, sons of law.
Sons in law. The two guys that were pledged to be married to his daughters.
I thought you said, yeah, that's what I thought you said.
This reminded me of our surroundings. Here we are. We're trying to warn people that there's a judgment coming, that God is going to destroy this earth, God is going to judge this place, and we're asking them to leave their wicked ways and leave the place that they're in. It sometimes looks to them as if we're joking. They think we're out of our minds. I was talking to we were having a conversation with a brother yesterday. He's going to see some family today, and if he does talk to them, they may think he's joking. They may be laughing at him. What? You're taking the Bible seriously? What? You're changing your ways? What? You have faith now? You? Of all the people that we know, you? Lot has faith. He is acting upon that faith. He hasn't seen the city destroyed yet. He has seen nothing. Yet he believed, and he is acting upon it. His sons-in-law, they have no faith. They're not going to act on it. Yes.
When the angels came to him, did they look like regular people?
I think they look like regular people. I think it wasn't even clear to Abraham until the very last that this was like Lord. He calls him Lord. He's reasoning with Lord.
I'm trying to think if regular people came to me.
And also he said, I'm nobody but dust and ashes. Now he recognizes who he is versus whoever is talking to him. I don't know. I don't think they recognize the angels. But at this point, they're introducing him as such. So what it said? Do you remember what they said?
No.
He said, verse 12, then the man said to Lot, have you anyone else here? Sons-in-law, sons, daughters, or anyone you have in the city? Bring them out of the place, for we are about to destroy this place because outcry against the people has become great before the Lord, and the Lord has sent us to destroy it. I mean, as a human, you're not going to be able to destroy a city. So it's telling that we're coming from God. We're messengers of God.
Like right now, if two dudes came to your door in Summit and told you that, do you think you'd leave?
Again, I don't know the exact circumstance, but you can see that these people were people of faith, and they not only they just believe, but they act in accord with their faith. Hold your thought. I'm going to wrap it up in a way that will make perfect sense to you. Verse 15. So remember, the two angels came to Lot in the evening. He took them in. They had a feast. They lay down to go to bed. What time is that now? When do you think they went to bed? Between 8 and 12, right? They came in the evening. Lot has to prep some food for them. They're eating and enjoying. They're about to go to bed. This thing happens. They knock at the door, right? Now, verse 15, when morning dawned, when does morning dawn?
6.
Exactly. Between 5 and probably 6:30, right? So what was Lot doing all this time? He was trying to probably convince his sons-in-law
to leave.
who said, I think you're joking, right? They just could not. They could not get themselves to believe such an incredible thing will happen, that God is going to destroy their city and they're going to die in it. Verse 15, when the morning dawned, the angels heard Lot's urged Lot, saying, "Arise, take your wife and your two daughters who are here, lest you be consumed in the punishment of the city." But he lingered. So the man seized them and his wife and his two daughters by the hand, the Lord being merciful to him. They brought him forth and brought him forth, set him outside the city. So initially, Lot seemed to be very eager, right? He goes out to his sons-in-law. He's warning them, right? What does it say? "Up, get out of this place, for the Lord is about to destroy the city." To he becomes this man that is lingering now. Why is he lingering? You know why he's lingering? Because he was talking to his sons-in-law who have no faith. And because Lot was hanging out with them and trying to convince them, and they were joking about it, it was costing his faith. He starts to linger now all of a sudden. The longer we spend with people of unbelief, it will chip away your faith. At night, he's super determined. In the morning, he's lingering. He needs angels to grab his hand to get him out of that place. So you may have some faith, but if you linger with people of unbelief, it will affect you. Verse 17. When they had brought them forth, they said, "Flee for your life. Do not look back or stop anywhere in the valley. Flee to the hills, lest you be consumed." And Lot said to them, "Oh no, my lords, behold, your servant has found in your sight favor in your sight. You've shown me great kindness in saving my life, but I cannot flee to the hills, lest the disaster overtake me and I die. Behold, yonder city is near enough to flee to, and it's a little one. Let me escape there. Is it not a little one? And my life will be saved." He said to him, "Behold, I grant you this favor also, that I will not overthrow the city of which you have spoken. Make haste, escape there, for I can do nothing till you arrive there." Therefore, the name of the city was called Zoar. The sun had risen on the earth when Lot came to Zoar. So, again, Lot is leaving the city with the angels, right? Initially, he hesitates, and the angels grab him. They tell him to run to the hills, but what does Lot say? No. He says, "No. Can I run to this other city that is a little over there?" And the angel says, "I'll grant your request." But look at what he says. "I will not overthrow the city of which you have spoken. Make haste, escape there, for I can do nothing till you arrive there." The angel says, "I can do nothing until you arrive there." What's that mean? How come
he
can't destroy the cities until Lot is out of there? Why? Why couldn't God destroy the cities until Lot is out? He says, "I can do nothing until you, I can do nothing till you arrive there."
Oh, he's the one righteous man.
Job 34, 10. "So listen to me," this is Job saying, "you men of understanding, far it be from God to do evil, from the Almighty to do wrong." Verse 12, "It's unthinkable that God would do wrong, that the Almighty will pervert justice." Man, you're a righteous man. Angels can do nothing until you're safe. One man, God values. If you're righteous, the angels could not do anything until you leave the city. Because it's impossible for God to do wrong. It's impossible for him to do wrong. Our God is holy. He is perfect. The God that we serve is holy. Verse 24. Then the Lord rained on Sodom and Gomorrah, brimstone and fire from the Lord out of heaven. He overthrew those cities and all the valley and all the inhabitants of the cities and what grew on the ground. But Lot's wife behind him looked back, and she became a pillar of salt. So they're leaving the city. After they leave the city, they were instructed not to look back. What did his wife do? Why do you think Lot's wife looked back?
Because she didn't have faith.
She did not have faith. Revelation 21 says, cowardly, unbelieving will not enter. She did not have faith. Even though she was able to move out of the city along with the righteous, but she didn't have enough to finish it. Mm-hmm. Why do you think she turned into a pillar of salt instead of just striking by with God stroking with the lightning?
I don't know about that.
Why do you think he turned into a salt? You know why people put statues around the world? What's the significance of a statue?
Remember a certain specific time.
Yes. So God wanted to put a statue, a reminder for us. If you take a flesh and cover it in salt, it will stop the decomposition. It's like an instant mummification in a way. Bacteria cannot, decomposers cannot eat through the flesh. Because salt is a disinfectant. She didn't just die. She became a memorial. For who?
Everyone.
To all humanity. To every person on the face of the earth. This is what happens to people of unbelief. This is what will happen to me or to you if you have unbelief. You believe, but you don't believe. God is going to test your faith with action. Did Lot have action? Why did he leave the city? It wasn't destroyed yet. He was running for his life. Did he know that it's going to happen? Yes, yeah. That's why he left. The lesson is the same to you. If you linger with the wicked, and that you're not counted righteous, you will be ruined with the wicked. When God destroys the cities of the earth, you will be ruined with it. Why brimstone? So God rains fire from heaven to destroy the cities. Why brimstone? You know what a brimstone is? It's like a sulfur. Why? Why does God use fire and brimstone? Sulfur stinks. It's stenchy. You will feel the fire on your skin, but you will be overwhelmed also with your senses of smell.
Yeah, I know what sulfur smells like.
God was overwhelming the cities, not only with fire, but also stench. Verse 27, Abraham went early in the morning to the place where he had stood before the Lord, who looked down toward Sodom and Gomorrah and toward all the land of the valley, and beheld. And behold, the smoke of the land went up like a smoke of a furnace. Why do you think Abraham got up early in the morning and to look toward Sodom? You remember what Lord said to him? I'm going to destroy. Does Abraham have faith? Absolutely. He goes up to see what has taken place and how it happened. Just like the Lord said to him what's going to happen, he sees the smoke coming out of the cities. It's about 25 miles. You know how far New York City is? about 20, 25 miles. And there are places that you can climb up in summit that you can see the city.
Yeah, you can see the city from our backyard.
You can see the city from your backyard. So it's about 20, 25 miles away. And Abraham can see the smoke coming out of the cities. Just like God said. How was, we're told, 2 Peter 2, verse 4, for he did not spare the angels who sinned, but cast them down to Tartarus and delivered them into chains of darkness to be reserved for judgment, did not spare the ancient world, but saved Noah, one of the eight people, a preacher of righteousness, bringing in the flood on the world of the ungodly and turning the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah into ashes, condemned them to destruction, making them an example to those who afterwards will live ungodly. He's making what happened with Lot and the Sodom and Gomorrah into the same paragraphs as Noah and the flood, how God killed the unrighteous, separated, saved the righteous, how God will punish the angels who have transgressed against him. This was like a lesson at the epic proportion of Noah and the flood proportions for us.
This
is Second Peter chapter 2, verse 7. Deliver righteous Lot, who was oppressed by the filthy conduct of the wicked. For that righteous man dwelling among them tormented his righteous soul from day to day by seeing and hearing their lawless deeds. Then the Lord knows how to deliver the godly out of temptation and to reserve the unjust under punishment for the day of judgment. Peter is calling him righteous. When I've heard many sermons about how Lot just makes a lot of mistakes. But Peter says he was righteous. How was he righteous? He had faith. How was he righteous? He acted upon his faith. He left the wicked cities. What's the lesson for us? If you want to be saved, you have to leave wickedness and the wicked places. Are you guys hearing me? Mm-hmm. You can hang with the unfaithful and the wicked people. You will be destroyed with them. God will not spare you unless you're righteous. God will not spare you from judgment unless you're righteous. Not just like in your faith, but also in your action. And if you hang with the people that have no faith, it will chip away the faith you have. Just like his sons-in-law chipping away Lot's faith. In the morning, he is hesitating. In the night, he's ready to run out. In the morning, he's hesitating. Verse 29, I'm going to wrap it up now. So it was that when God destroyed the cities of the valley, God remembered Abraham and sent Lot out of the midst of the overthrow, when he overthrew the cities in which the Lot dwelt. And later on, how he's afraid to live in Zoar, the little place. And then he has to go to a cave, and his two daughters are going to have, children through their father. And they become the two nations, Moabites and the Ammonites of the Bible. So in summary, righteous Lot, how is he righteous? When angels goes up to him, tells him to leave the city, he is about to leave the city. Why? Because he believes them. Same as Noah was warned that there's a flood coming, he responded. But how? He built a big boat. He built a big boat in the middle of the land. Don't you think people mocked him as he was building the boat? Lot leaves the city before it's destroyed. Shows that he has faith. He acts upon the faith that God has given him. Why does his wife doesn't make it? Because of unbelief. No unbelieving is going to be making there. If you're going to serve God, if you want to be a man of God, you have to go all in. You have to look forward to the things that God promised and not doubt them and live accordingly. Show it in your life that you do believe that this place is going to be destroyed. That this place is going to be destroyed. Your life shows that you know that this place is going to be destroyed. And you're coming out of them. And you want to be among the righteous. Otherwise, you will not be spared yourself. And I will not be spared. And you won't be spared. And don't linger too much among the people of unbelief. It will chip away your faith.